morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Friday, January the 21st. And here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. The World Health Organization reports a significant drop in the number of new cases of COVID-19 in Africa for the first time since the Omicron variant began widely circulating on the continent 2 months ago.
The deep inequity that left Africa at the back of the queue for vaccines must not be repeated with life-saving treatments.
And Rwanda's capital, Kigali, has been named a winner of the 2021 Bloomberg Global Mayors Challenge.
We tried to bring in a technology of collecting rainwater, storing it, cleaning it, and reusing it in our daily life.
In Nigeria's oil-producing regions, authorities are blaming illegal oil refiners for air pollution that can cause respiratory problems. South Sudan has held a peace Olympics to help reconcile communities divided by conflict. We have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, the World Health Organization reports a significant drop in the number of new cases of COVID-19 in Africa for the first time since the Omicron variant began widely circulating on the continent 2 months ago. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The coronavirus pandemic has infected nearly 10.5 million people in Africa and killed more than 234,000. World Health Organization officials say the latest figures reflect a 20% drop in coronavirus cases in the week up to January 16 and an 8% dip in deaths. While the fourth Omicron-fueled wave appears to have peaked, WHO Regional Director for Africa, Matshidiso Moeti, says the continent is not yet out of the pandemic woods. She says further monitoring is needed to determine whether the trend will be sustained.
However, while four sub-regions reported a fall in new cases, we're closely monitoring the situation in North Africa, where cases spiked by 55%. And Tunisia and Morocco have both seen an exponential increase, overtaking South Africa as the countries with the most cases on the continent.
The highly transmissible Omicron variant triggered a sharp surge in the number of cases, but the severity of disease appears to be milder than that of previous strains. Nevertheless, Moeti says the continent has not yet turned the tide on the pandemic. She says there is no room for complacency. She warns further pandemic waves are inevitable as long as the virus continues to circulate. She notes Africa remains particularly vulnerable because of its unequal access to life-saving vaccines. She says Africa faces similar impediments in gaining access to a full range of COVID-19 treatments. The WHO has approved 11 therapeutics that can be used to treat COVID-19. It currently is reviewing the data on two oral antivirals, which have shown promising results in reducing the risk of hospitalization in some patients. WHO Regional Director Moeti says she fears Africa once again may lose out in gaining access to those treatments because of their limited availability and high cost. For example, she notes two effective antibody treatments cost between $550 and $1,220 for a single dose.
The deep inequity that left Africa at the back of the queue for vaccines must not be repeated with life-saving treatments. Universal access to diagnostics, vaccines, and therapeutics will pave the shortest path to the end of this pandemic.
Moeti warns nations to prepare for the appearance of other transmissible, possibly more virulent strains of the coronavirus. She says the coronavirus will continue to mutate and pose an ongoing threat to nations if the inequitable distribution of life-saving vaccines and therapeutics between rich and poor countries is maintained. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Voice of America.
Rwanda's capital, Kigali, has been named a winner of the 2021 Bloomberg Global Mayors Challenge. The award is issued by a philanthropic organization created by Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City. The prize recognizes 15 cities with the most ambitious ideas to emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic. They include progress in at least one of the four areas: economic recovery, health and well-being, climate and environment, gender and equality. Eugene Uwimana has more details from Kigali.
Kigali won the award for its work on a smart waste system that improves sanitation and water quality. Currently, waste is left out in the open until it is picked up for collection in an unsanitary situation and a health hazard. The new system separates the various kinds of waste and collects them in smart bins that alert companies to empty them when they are full. Kigali and the other 14 winners will receive $1 million and several years of technical support to refine their project and scale them up. The Rwandan capital competed with applicants from 631 cities and 99 countries around the world. In different parts of Kigali, citizens are talking about their award their city has won. This man says the award shows that the government's efforts to make Kigali clean and secure have not gone unnoticed by even foreigners. For every patriotic Rwandan, he says this is a joyous moment. The 2021 Bloomberg Global Mayor Challenge recognizes Kigali not only for its efforts to improve wastewater, but for other innovations developed during the pandemic. They include the use of drones to deliver anti-COVID-19 vaccines to hard-to-reach areas and to spread education messages. Kigali has also developed an electronic database of test results and improved multimedia and graphics for coronavirus information to the public. The initiatives have contributed to the government's success in promoting vaccinations. According to the Rwanda Biomedical Center, more than 40% of the population has been fully vaccinated, meeting a global target set by the World Health Organization. Addressing the media after the announcement of the award, the mayor of Kigali, Pidance Ruwingisa, says much of the money is going to help the city implement the project on waste management and rainwater harvesting that will protect over 1,400 households in the flood-prone areas.
It is a project that is based on, number one, harvesting rainwater. As we upgrade the informal settlement, we tried to bring in a technology of collecting rainwater, storing it, cleaning it, and reusing it in our daily life. So, and another component is, again, the waste management, but bringing in a smart component, smart waste in our neighborhood.
The mayor says the money will be well used and applied to efforts that are already underway.
It is very sustainable because we have already done a piloting project for the waste, smart waste management, with the help of the Minister of ICT and REMA, the Minister of Environment. We had some piloting sites that really put up for us to make sure that it works and see if we can eventually adjust, because it was a piloting phase.
As the battle against COVID-19 continues, the Rwandan government has imposed restrictions that deny access to social services to people who have refused to be vaccinated. According to the Minister of Health, the measures are meant to push the country towards its target of vaccinating 60% of all Rwandans by June. The cities will share their ideas with the others around the world to improve the lives of millions living in urban areas. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
South Sudan has held a Peace Olympics to help reconcile communities divided by conflict. The TWIC Olympics this year marked its 20th anniversary, as Sheila Pony reports from TWIC County in South Sudan.
A spiritual leader blesses athletes to protect them from injury, while a goat represents the belief that power comes from nature. This is not the Winter Olympics in Beijing. It's the TWIC Olympics in northern South Sudan. The annual 2 weeks of games in January attracts athletes from six communities to compete in traditional Olympic and team sports. The aim, to reduce communal conflict. Volleyball player Ring Agwekring knows the violence firsthand.
Even in 2021, I even belong here in Chartamani.
In May, they came to raid our cattle, and in the process of protecting them, he says, Agwekring was shot, but he succeeded in getting his cows back. He says he is in the games as an injured person, but can still play because he thinks the game is a unifying factor that promotes peace among ourselves and the community. Organizers say more than 700 young men and women participated in this year's games. One participant, Susan Achol, talks about the importance of the event and the impact sports can have on their communities.
We can just all be together, so at least we can't think of war, or we can't say that guy is from another clan or something like that. We just cooperate and we play as one team.
Agnes, the sound of appreciative fans and competition, Twitch Olympics founder Achil Bangal explains the mission of the games and the organization he founded more than 20 years ago.
The Twitch Olympic Association is not a program. It is identity. It has its mission, and its mission is going to be the sport for peace and giving chance to children to grow. Peace does not come without agenda. You cannot tell people to remain peaceful without them being active on something that is keeping them away from bad activities. You're building another avenue of communicating and interacting with youth.
South Sudan enters its 11th year of independence, challenged on many levels. Chola Jing, Secretary General of the Twitch Olympic Association, says it is clear that sports cut across barriers that divide communities. He says it allows the youth to become better citizens in the country they have inherited.
You know, like in South Sudan, the crisis of 2013 and 16 was fueled up because the young people responded. And what about if young people get engaged in activities like this and do not think about joining the politicians and fuel the war? Because we're being misused by the politicians. So the youth has to fight for their own interests, and when they get what they want, they go back and forget about us. But we can call this our own. We can also attract them to come so that we move this nation forward.
These South Sudanese athletes prefer tug of war and are urging those still fighting real battles to drop their weapons. Angelo Goleng Garang, a former football player, is one of them.
Once you are participating in the games, I will come to know you, and you will also come to know me. That enmity that exists between us will erase.
He urged others to join in the glory of sport. Sheila Aponi for VOA News, Twitch Mayardit, South Sudan.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Funganyi. In Malawi, Youth and Society, a human rights and governance watchdog, is calling for the immediate resignation or firing of Kezi Msukwa, Minister for Lands, Housing and Urban Development, over allegations of corruption. The group is also questioning why President Lazarus Chakwera has yet to fire the minister following his indictment and subsequent arrest by the Anti-Corruption Bureau. The group says failure of the president to suspend or sack the minister will erode public confidence in his administration. Mr. Msukwa was arrested after he was accused of taking a bribe after allowing a sale of a parcel of land in the capital, Lilongwe, to a British national. He denies the accusation, saying the land was sold before he became a minister. He has since refused to resign. Charles Kajoloweka is the executive director for the Youth and Society Organization. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that his organization has issued a one-week ultimatum for the minister to resign. If not, the institution will seek unspecified democratic measures to ensure the removal of Msukwa from office.
Our view is that he is not fit to, occupy a public office. The president has made very clear from the word go that anyone in the cabinet or in government that is associated with corruption is going to relieve them of their duties. And we have done that in the past. We saw the Minister of Energy, for example, Honorable Kambala, who was fired following his arrest by the Bureau. And we've also seen several presidential aides at State House being fired for being implicated in various, you know, corruption allegations. Now, the question that we have is how special is Honorable Kenzi Musukwa? After being indicted by the Anti-Corruption Bureau, he still continues to serve as a cabinet minister, and the president continues to procrastinate his action against these allegations of Honorable Musukwa.
But yes. Charles, these are mere allegations, and as the saying goes among legal brains, you can even indict a potato. These allegations, it has not been proven in a court of competent jurisdiction that he violated his oath of office.
These are criminal allegations that have been preferred upon him by a competent law enforcement institution. That's why it had effected the arrest. So it's beyond mere allegations. What is remaining is for him to defend himself before the law. Here is an institution that carried out investigations and they found him wanting. In addition, Section 12 of the Constitution of Malawi is very candid that those that occupy public office, they do so on trust, and they can only continue to occupy those offices on sustained trust. Now, here is a breach of trust.
Your organization has issued a 7-day ultimatum to Minister Musukwa to resign. He has insisted he isn't resigning if he's not fired by the president. What say you?
We are of the view that he must resign. We will continue to pursue other, you know, democratic means within the law to put pressure on the president as well as the implicated minister. At the end of the day, we would want to see accountability of these high-profile individuals when they're facing the law. Would want to see justice at the end of the day. And lastly, would want to see to it that those offices are occupied by people that we can trust. And his arrogance, it's not the first time we have dealt with such a level of arrogance before. You would recall that when we were pursuing the Maizegate case in 2016, against the former Minister of Agriculture, Honorable George Chaponda, we faced the same resistance. But we believe in the resilience of the people of Malawi, and we believe that the president is going to find merit in not keeping these criminal suspects in his cabinet.
That was Charles Kajoloweka. He's the Executive Director for Youth and Society, a watchdog organization in Lilongwe, Malawi. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty. In Nigeria's oil-producing regions, authorities are blaming illegal oil refiners for air pollution that can cause respiratory problems. Authorities began cracking down on offenders this month, but some local residents blame authorities for not making fuel cheap enough. Timothy Obiezu reports from Port Harcourt in Nigeria.
A heavily armed state security convoy heads out after receiving a tip-off about an oil theft site somewhere in the bush in Southern Rivers State. Along a bumpy road, they drove for about 1 hour before they arrived at the oil bunkering site. Officers searched the site and arrested a suspect who was trying to escape. He explained that he had only been there for 3 months working to raise some cash.
More than 3 minutes.
When the police people came, the others ran away, but I had no money with me to go back home. I was trying to raise some money, he said.
This is Ogbodo, a local community in the oil-rich Nigerian state. For weeks, authorities have been cracking down on illegal oil refining operations known locally as bullfire. It's a local process where crude oil is burned to extract petroleum, causing residue to be released in the form of thick, black suit. In this community alone, authorities say they have so far found about 11 sites where oil is being stolen and stored for bullfire, a practice called oil bunkering in Nigeria. Nearby, another base was found, ransacked and abandoned by the time officials arrived. Air pollution caused by these illegal activities has resulted in Rivers State having some of the most polluted air in Africa. Authorities say they intend to keep pressure on the illegal operations. Samuel Nwanosike is a local district leader.
We are aware that the criminals are making their plots and plan to do whatever they do. We are not but thoughts. We are equal to the task. It's a war. who have told them, we know them, we have their names. Their names have been, they've been declared wanted.
Authorities also say the damage caused to the land by these illegal bunkering activities could take up to 75 years to rehabilitate. State Governor Nyesom Wike last week declared 19 major illegal operators wanted and pledged to reward whistleblowers with $5,000 cash. This week, Nigerian lawmakers also called for an end to black suit pollution. But some locals, like kerosene dealer Sosogold, say the illegal operators provide cheaper oil products and that their businesses will be threatened if they are stopped.
What to make I no one stop and be safe? I dey get small, small gain to use feed. I don't get husband. I don't get any help. So, dear, when I go buy, I will get small thing where I go use. I get three children.
Meanwhile, Nigeria is struggling to reopen refineries that were shut down in late 2020 to undergo updating and improve their capacities. Critics say systemic government corruption is slowing the process and forcing Nigeria to continue to rely on imports for its energy needs. However, authorities say those who steal oil and illegally refine it will be charged and face jail time if convicted. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Port Harcourt, River State, Nigeria.
And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports. With that, we go to Cameroon with Samson O'Malley. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sport in Cameroon, where the lineup for the group of 16 has been confirmed in the ongoing African Cup of Nations following the conclusion of group matches on Thursday. Mali booked their passage to the knockout stage of the African Cup of Nations as Group F winners, thanks to a 2-0 win over Mauritania. The Mali side went into the final round of group matches in second in the standings, but their 2-0 win combined with Gambia's 1-0 victory over Tunisia meant they took the top spot. On goal difference, Gambia and Tunisia also advanced to the knockout stages, with the Gambia finishing second in the group. Mali will now take on Equatorial Guinea in the round of 16. Gambia were able to secure second place thanks to Boubacar Gaye's penalty save from Selfidine Zazri and Abil Jallo's goal deep into injury time. The late goal made no difference to the positions as Gambia took second and Tunisia third. Gambia will now face Guinea on Monday, while Tunisia will face Nigeria on Sunday. In Thursday's early kickoff, Cote d'Ivoire defeated defending champions Algeria 3-1 to finish top of Group E and eliminate the title holders from the African Cup of Nations. Needing a win to stay alive, Algeria trailed by 2 goals at the break after Frankie Kessie capped off a fine move and Ibrahim Sangare headed home. The victory confirmed top spot for Cote d'Ivoire ahead of Equatorial Guinea, who beat Sierra Leone 1-0 in Limbe to finish second. The Leone Stars finished third with 2 points and Algeria bottom with a point. Staying with the African Cup of Nations, Arsenal striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang said on Thursday he had been given a clean bill of health after leaving the African Cup of Nations to return to London for heart checks. The Gabon Football Federation said last week that tests conducted in Cameroon after the player was positive for COVID-19 had found cardiac license. Aubameyang was released from quarantine last week but did not play against Ghana on Friday after doctors reported a cardiac license. The player was stripped of the Arsenal captaincy in December after a disciplinary breach and has been linked to other clubs in the transfer window. The Ghana Football Association president, Kurt Okraku, says he accepts the blame for the Black Stars' poor performance at the 2021 African Cup of Nations. Ghana exited the competition on Tuesday, January 18th, following their 3-2 loss to Comoros at the Roundé Ayadia Stadium, resulting in the team finishing the campaign with just 1 point and languishing bottom in Group C behind Morocco, Gabon and Comoros. The group stage exit has led to strong criticism from Ghanaians, while others have also called for the sacking of current coach Milovan Radivac for failing to qualify the team to the next stage. The Ghana Football Association president says he should be given the blame for the team's poor showing in Cameroon.
Thank you, Samson, and have a great weekend. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Until next week, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.